This podcast is individually owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of this show do not express those of all radio or podcast shows. Neither the hosting services or show hosts or guests shall be held liable for the content of this program. Of Dragons and Starships is copyrighted, and no recording, redistribution, or rebroadcast is allowed without express permission. Greetings and welcome to the 26th episode of Dragons and Starships. I'm CJ McKee, and I'm out here crushing oranges.
Yeah, this is Angus. I'm just collecting all the rinds from CJ just so we can have something to light up and keep Montana melted.
Oh, yeah, it needs to be melted. It's already snowing again out here.
Yeah, Colorado's not much different other than lack of moisture.
Why don't we go ahead and start off with In the News.
In the News. So, I'm up first tonight, thanks to CJ, and it's Cosmic Radio Waves. Woo! From the Royal Astronomy Society, UK. What this news bit is about is coherent radio waves have been detected by a radio telescope in the southern hemisphere that's run, I guess it's run as a collaborative effort for this study, but it's the Arecibo Telescope in Puerto Rico. It's not quite in the southern hemisphere. Let's call it the equator. But what they're getting is radio waves that are short cycling, and it's from a cosmic source. It's not from a satellite. I guess the game is on to try and figure out if these are actually artificially generated or generated by a star that went wacko. Strong magnetic fields near the source. That really narrows it down for me, ladies and gents. Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty happy that Swinburne University, that's kind of big in astronomy, the Carnegie Institution and University of Copenhagen are all collaborating on trying to isolate, filter, and perhaps at some point, if they actually see something in there, figure out a way to decrypt it, if it's artificial. If not, it's still neat because it's a fast burst. So when the military wants to communicate something from point to point these days, they do things called compression, and that's after you encrypt. And that's so that they can do burst transmissions so that whatever site is emitting can't be radio direction found in a short order and then have a bunch of door prizes landing on them of the 20-pound or heavier nature that go boom. The concept of having a fast radio burst seems to indicate that, you know, it's not there the whole time. There's actually coherent space in between these bursts that are coming through, which indicates some form of communication. We're just not smart enough to have figured it out yet. And that's all I got to say about that. We'll have the link up in the show notes. And CJ is ending the universe.
Yeah, well, actually, Marvel's ending their own universe. Apparently, they're doing some type of massive war of all of the superheroes in the Marvel universe. This is going to result in the destruction of essentially crossover world. It's going to be Marvel Universe, Ultimate Universe are going to basically come together in this huge war, and they're going to wind up pretty much creating this new universe called Battle World. And they're all going to battle it out and destroy each other, and that's going to wipe out the current Marvel Universe, the Marvel that we know and have known for a very long time. I think that they're setting this up, even though nobody's really saying anything about it yet, for an entirely new Marvel Universe to be created. And it's an excuse to basically reboot everything, which is something that we're already used to since Hollywood's been doing that for some time now. And I don't know how this is going to affect the Marvel movies, ultimately. Probably not for some time, because of the simple fact they've got all these other movies lined up that are still in this current Marvel Universe between now and the next few years. However, there has been some rumors that there's going to be a Marvel Civil War based on the comics of the Civil War So that kind of tells me that they're planning to somehow take this part of the Civil War and create these what they're calling the Secret Wars, where everybody battles it out and the Marvel Universe gets destroyed. So at some point in time, there's going to be reboots upon reboots upon reboots upon reboots, both in comic and in film. Apparently Stan Lee is just absolutely dandy with that, and why wouldn't he be? The guy's in his 90s, he's filthy rich, he's created an empire and is well known. He's pretty much established, so he's handing the reins over and saying, knock yourselves out, do what you want with it. I've got what I want out of it, so, you know, I'm a little surprised that he's so calm about it and so good with it, because I know some people are just seeing this just like I am. Oh, this is just another opportunity to reboot and freshen things up, as they put it. But I don't know. I've started collecting comics again, and I saw some changes and some things that I didn't really care for, so I haven't kept up on it as much as I would have liked to. But now it's drastically changing. So, well, my biggest concern is that they're just going to destroy the entire Marvel Universe in their way of, I don't know, saying goodbye to the old, because they don't want it. They feel like it's tired and old, and they can't do it anymore. And I don't know. There's plenty of stories out there, but they obviously need to get better writers.
Starting to seem that way. I mean, yeah. How many freaking reboots of Spider-Man do they ever need? And one of the reasons I'm kind of glad that you assigned yourself these things tonight, CJ, is that I already had an attack of the rant earlier this week when I saw the grapevine saying that Disney was planning on having Chris Pratt reboot Indiana Jones. Like, what the fuck, morons? Just don't do that. And Chris Pratt, these actors, I know they're having huge wads, and I'm referring to money, flashed in their face to go and do these things, and they think, oh, yeah, I could be my childhood hero from film. It's like, wait a minute now. Why don't we do something original and new, and I can still blaze instead of being, come along and perhaps do some damage to something that was already of entertainment value. It's like, it's really ridiculous. So,
yeah, I know. And I've gotten to the point where I'm really tempted to just start boycotting all of these so-called reboots and movies that they've been making that are rehashing things from, they're not even that old. I mean, I can see, like, they had Day the Earth Stood Still. They rebooted that, which was absolutely a train wreck. You know, so if you're going to do something that's a lot older and bring it more to a modern flair, that's great. But Hollywood has proved themselves over and over again that they don't want to do the quality story anymore. They just want to have all the, you know, special effects and all the, I don't know, fireworks, whatever you want to call it. It's, I don't know. I just feel like they think that they need to cater to a completely different audience and screw everybody else who is already their fan base and has already established them to this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to lend itself to the reboot thing. I mean, other than corporate talking heads saying, this is how we're going to provide for our stockholders, you know, and selling it that way. It's a chicken shit way to go about dealing with fans.
Exactly. That's what I mean, is they're backstabbing their old fans and basically saying, we don't care about you anymore. The fact that you're the ones who built up this universe and kept it going for so long, they want the new young blood in there. That's all they want.
So much for loyalty. Okay. So, not quite in the same venue. Anyway, not quite a segue either. This next item is martial artist who died just recently. And he was, you know, kind of famous, you know, not by name, but you saw him in tons of stuff. Lately, he had been recurring quite a bit on Mortal Kombat and Arrow. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. Arrow mainly. He was in Watchmen, 300, Sanctuary, found dead in his home. Some reports say cause of death unknown. TMZ is reporting that he died from a prescription overdose. He passed away at the age of 42. Yeah, well, I guess we outlived him, huh, CJ?
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that people like this are fit all over the place, and it never fails to come up when somebody's actually famous or been acting or, you know, a stunt person, and they die at an early age, and they've been doing all these risky things, but then they die from something so mundane that mm-hmm. it may be prescription med, or they may have just fallen dead in their own home from a lung or heart issue that was unknown to them, because since they didn't have other illnesses, they weren't going to the doctor. And all of a sudden it reared up, bit them in the ass, or in some other vital organ.
Well, and that's just it. I've known people actually that were, you know, close to my age or, you know, maybe even a little bit younger that were in shape, ate right, you know, they exercised, they did all the things that people, doctors and everybody says you're supposed to do, and boom, one day after dinner, he just dropped dead.
Yeah, there's a guy who worked in warehouses. We went in the same circles in Pennsylvania before I moved out to Colorado, and he got bumped by a pallet jack that was carrying a load, and it put a pretty big bruise on his thigh. Apparently later that night, that bruise turned into an internal clot and went up to his brain and put him down. But before then, he was running marathons. He was fit, you know. It's like you never know what's going to reach out and say, okay, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. So
kind of makes you want to be one of the Fantastic Four, doesn't it, CJ?
Not in this case, no. as people have probably already discovered, there's a brand new Fantastic Four trailer out there for the rebooted Fantastic Four, which is, all I can say is I'm not watching this movie. They have taken this movie and turned it into some kind of a joke. And they're obviously trying to appeal to the younger generation for this movie. They've got people that, some of these actors I've never even heard of, that are much younger than the previous actors and the previous version of Fantastic Four. And, of course, it doesn't match up with the comics either as far as the ages of the characters. They have this very young character that there is no way he is believable as a scientist, a very smart scientist that can, you know, figure all these things out, create all these devices that the Fantastic Four uses. In addition to that, they now have drastically changed characters by having Johnny Storm being a black character and Sue Storm still being a white character, and now the way they're explaining it, which nobody's figured out until they just now
adoption
brought it out, that she's the one that was adopted into the family. And now instead of Dr. Doom being this nutball, crazy, and powerful scientist who went over the edge and became Dr. Doom, he's now basically an angry blogger. I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to, you know, bring it all into the modern age and be all hip and all this other stuff. But in the process, they're turning the entire movie into an absolute joke. And some people are saying, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be fresh. It looks dark. There's nothing dark about it, in my opinion, at least not from what I can see in the trailer. And obviously, it's very short, and they really don't show much of anything.
You know what, bud? You know, the whole thing would be almost so not an issue if they would have all these cool storylines that you've just described and create a new damn franchise.
There you go.
Don't call it Fantastic Four. Call it something else.
And, of course, here's their way of trying to prove themselves even more of a new version of the Fantastic Four. The round version of the logo for Fantastic Four with the four in it, you know, in a round frame, is now square.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. So square, you know, yeah, that makes sense. This is very square. They have gone out of their way to make sure this is completely different in all sorts of ways. Even the outfits that they're wearing, it looks like they're wearing, once again, there's that hoodie jacket look to it.
Yeah, but see, it's such a bitch move when they're relying on hauling in the crowd that is Fantastic Four fans.
Well, exactly.
Just by throwing that name out there. you know?
Well, that's just it. There's a lot of people who are already fans that see this, and they're like, I'm not going to go see this garbage. Mm-hmm. You know, they did not make it to appeal to established fans. They created it to appeal to the younger fans. They're not even fans, just young people in general. So to me, it's going to be just another, you know, special effects movie with some familiarity with the comics in name only, as far as that goes. So yeah, they've pigeonholing everything into the younger generation to go watch this movie and become fans. I would be very surprised if they even tried to do a sequel on this. I don't know. A lot of people are saying they want to go see it. A lot of people are saying they absolutely refuse to see it based on even previous, not just the trailer itself, but previous to this. So,
well, they're trying to stake claim to an oil well there too. So if they do happen to make sequels, they can cut costs by going back and mining the plots from Fantastic Four.
Right.
So they need to... Oh, never mind. All right. Moving on.
See, the only good thing is that they've, at least as far as I can tell, they've got a lot of unknowns here. I've never heard of any of these people prior to this, but then again, I don't keep up on, you know, youth films.
damn, guys.
That's right. Get off my lawn. But, yeah, so I have no idea who these people are, and that's, to me, the way it should be. It should be people who are unknown anyways playing superhero parts. We've proven that with people like Christopher Reeve playing Superman, for instance.
Yeah, Henry Cavill.
You know, there you go. So it's always a good idea to have somebody who's not that well-known playing those parts. I'm sorry, but that's my rant for the week. I will not see this movie. I do not like the direction it's gone in. Once again, Hollywood fails.
Yeah, there's too many independents that I'm finding out about that are out there. That's what we got to do is we got to find our solid source for rounding up independent films, because there's a whole lot of talent that's not getting noticed out there. It's getting overwhelmed by the hype of these idiotic reboots.
Exactly. Well, here's a perfect example. We've got the, I think two or three at least, original series Star Trek continuing episodes. And this is, I mean, they've got people who are doing the parts of Captain Kirk and Spock and McCoy and everybody else and doing their version of continuing episodes of the original series. And they're doing an incredible job. You know, of course, you know, you can never replace the original actors for the original characters. But overall storyline, there are some of them out there that are very well done and sticking to the original storyline and feeling and even the look of the original series Star Trek.
There's even a Kickstarter going on right now for Christopher Doohan to get his engineering room so he can be Scotty.
Right.
It's like,
well, I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah. All right. We ready to move backwards here?
Yeah, let's move backwards in time and talk about that asteroid that just went whizzing past us.
Yeah, that asteroid that kind of, at least publicity-wise, flew in under the radar, even though it shouldn't have, this last Monday. We're going to have a clip from NASA up on our show notes that shows this thing. And so they were tracking this as an NEO, and they knew that it wasn't going to hit Earth, but it was really big, really close. And what the teabaggers out there really need to grasp in their non-science cranium is, we have no control over those things. So if you look at this film clip, you're going to realize that even though they knew ahead of time that this was going to be a near pass on this asteroid, they had no freaking clue that it had its own moon. This silent film is more terrifying if you actually have a brain in your head and understand what our position in the cosmos is than any horror thing that we can put up on, I'm losing words here, CJ.
The big screen?
Yeah, the big screen and charge people money for. If you actually understand what you're seeing in this silent film, you should be questioning whether or not you need to go void your bladder, because there is nothing else that can make us feel as diminished and in our place as some huge cosmic object that is rolling by to remind us that until we get off this planet, we have no control whether or not that bastard hits us.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you remember years ago when we had the ship that we had sent to this one comet or asteroid that was passing by us, and we wanted to, they were saying they wanted to blow a chunk of it off so they can collect rocks and data and some other information. Do you remember that
one?
Well,
they did. They used aerogel to collect the stuff after they dropped the impactor portion on the comet, which apparently was like dropping a school bus on the thing. It shot a geyser crap up, and the in the tail of the comet, the aerogel thing was hanging out there, and then they dumped it on its return mission. It landed in the Utah desert.
Right. Well, there's people that seem to be under the impression that that was actually a asteroid that was on a collision course with us, and we were setting up a explosive device to knock it off course so it wouldn't hit Earth.
Wow, and they are tards. We have no way of doing anything like that. The closest thing that we have is something that two astronauts proposed a few years ago. It's called a tractor. And what it basically means is you get some ships out near the thing when it's far enough away from the planet to actually have it gravitate towards those ships. And you just kind of pull it along like the dog that's not quite trained by using close gravitational forces.
Right.
We don't have anything. If we impact any of that crap, all it turns into is a shotgun shell.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those people are stupid. All right, moving on to some people that I think are really damn smart. The Falcon Heavy. Now, I don't know if I've mentioned it on here before, but I've been keeping my eye on this thing for about 3 years now. And what it is the next stage of SpaceX rocket. You've heard in the news about Dragon capsule being launched to resupply the International Space Station upon the Falcon 9. What the 9 stands for is how many vectored nozzles this thing has on the bottom of it when it's lifting off, and that helps it maintain its balance, because it's flying up through the atmosphere. It's kind of like an inverted pendulum. So by vectoring all these nozzles on and off, you keep it stable in flight without having to spin it.
Mm.
The Falcon Heavy will have 27 of these nozzles under it. It's going to go up, and now with the recent evolution of SpaceX's technology, where they didn't gently land their booster back on this floating platform, but they did manage to hit the damn thing. And you think about a 300 by 300 meter platform floating out in the middle of the ocean. Yeah, that's pretty damn cool that they were able to hit it ass first with the booster coming back in. And the booster was still retrievable. It didn't go to the bottom of the briny sea.
Yeah.
So what their plan is to use the Falcon Heavy. It'll get past its first stage portion, and the two side boosters will come off of it and will be controlled vectored back to landing sites in Texas, where SpaceX has its launch complex being built. The central booster will continue pushing the payload into higher orbit. And then once it's done its job, it's going to separate, come back the same way under control. And then the payload portion of this thing will continue on. Now, if you watch the film, it's pretty cool up until the last minute. The last minute kind of takes it away from me. The whole point of this stupid thing is to get it up there and build spacecraft, or take this craft all the way to Mars, or take it to an asteroid. Well, at the end of this film, they show it dropping its fairings, and okay, now it's launched a satellite or something that's heading towards the sun to do scientific studies. That's great. We need those kind of things, but you wouldn't use that size of a rocket to do that. The whole point of this is to launch a big-ass payload up so that you can cut your construction times down for making bigger things in orbit that will then go from planet to planet. But anyway, I'm still cool. I enjoyed the hell out of this film. It was a proof, you know, they've pretty much in the last couple of weeks run through all of their proof of concepts that they needed to finally pull this off. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with the initial launch of the Falcon Heavy. I still think it's on for this year. I'm not quite sure of the date. That seems to be in flux right now.
Cool. Well, we're definitely moving forward and getting even more of these ships up there to do the job that needs to be done.
I concur. I endorse this message.
All right. You ready to go back to some reboot BS? So now we have another reboot. I guess they couldn't get Bill Murray or anybody else together to do anything about creating a sequel to the original Ghostbusters.
Well, Harold Ramis is dead.
Well, unfortunately, yes, that's true. There's that. I mean, they just waited too long. That's all there was to it. Well, all their, you know, Bill Murray holding out, you know, bitching and moaning, whatever they were doing. So now I guess Hollywood's decided, well, screw you guys. We'll just go ahead and reboot it, this time with an all-female cast. So now they're going to have a new Ghostbusters with Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I don't understand, really, other than in name only, how Hollywood thinks they can really make a lot of money off of this, except maybe because of the particular names they're using in this reboot. But they have – they're starting over basically from scratch with this, hoping, I'm guessing, to make more sequels and make more money off of this once again because it's called Ghostbusters. Now, the fact that they have Melissa McCarthy in it tells me all I need to know about this movie. Yes, she's funny and stuff, but she plays the same kind of character over and over and over and over again. And I could just see whatever part she's going to be playing being played the same as all these other characters she's played in previous movies. I don't know. Like I said before, this movie's going to be silly as opposed to good and funny and have a good storyline to it. You cannot reboot originals. You just can't do it.
No.
They've already proven they're incapable of doing it.
Yeah, why don't they make something different? You know, it's like, for some reason, I'm looking at this article you put up, CJ, and Dan Aykroyd, new Ghostbusters cast is magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
Really? It's like,
yeah.
Come on, dude.
It seems to be that, just like with Stan Lee, you know, saying, oh, yeah, it's great what they're doing with Marvel. You know, they're all trying to not make waves and just show how in support they are of all these things that are going on. And you know damn well they're not thinking that deep down, you know. But, of course, Dan Aykroyd, he's a nice guy. Maybe he is. Maybe he's like, okay, whatever, more power to you. I don't know.
Yeah. I've seen him lately, and there's no way he could go back to playing that character. Matter of fact, Bill Murray, you know, he was a different kind of shape back then. I haven't seen Ernie Hudson in anything recently. So I can't speak to what's up with him. But
yeah.
It's been so long now, they would need walkers to go
and
don't even cross the streams, man.
Yeah.
Another thing that I'm not going to go see, but you know what? That opens up time for me to read something original or go see some of these independent films that I'm just now finding out about years after they get up.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you there. I'm going to be following a lot more of the independent film industry, whether it's the Star Trek episodes that are being continued, any independent filmmakers, TV series, or actual films, full-length films. I'm done. I cannot deal with the absolute garbage and trash that's being turned out from Hollywood these days. There's very little I even want to see anymore. I don't think I've even been to a theater in 10 years.
Yeah, I can't say that, but I can tell you that I'm giving my dollars to Redbox, or I'm giving them to Netflix instead of paying the god-awful prices you have to pay to go to the theater to see someone regurgitate something that was done well the first time. They didn't have to remake it.
Exactly.
And I'm not doing that anymore. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So, you know, we urge everybody to do the same thing.
I think we've had enough reboot rant for this week, haven't we?
Yeah, this has pretty much filled us up for probably the rest of the month. So, happy February!
Da-da-da!
Okay, let's move on to our question of the week. I'll let you read this one off, and we'll
All right.
go from there.
Well, I put this one up. This is taken from a couple of books that I've been reading. Basically, it goes back to what would urge us as a species. What would be the driving motivation for us to colonize off-world? And it's comparing it to what has driven us to colonize in the past as a species. So when you start looking at, let's just single it out, because most of the New World colonization was religiously driven, if not for looking for the city of gold, that is. But you'll notice that in history, in looking for the city of gold, they also dragged along Franciscans and whoever else to convert the natives and to sell it to the public as this is a worthy mission for us. Not only will we be looking for gold, which you won't ever get any of, we will be completing God's mission to go out and convert the unwashed and uncaring masses.
The heathens.
So what is the likelihood that religious fervorism could lead to a movement of interstellar colonization for the purpose of missionary work? And there are several science fiction works out there that actually deal with that. I think one of the works, or one scientific or science fiction author that has written works that deal with that is Dan Simmons with Hyperion and that whole series, where it may not be the main driving force behind his storyline, but it's definitely covered in it, where he has segments of colonists that have gone out and tried to convert things that they found, thinking they were sentient.
Well, I could certainly see that happening. It would be one of those things that wouldn't happen right off the bat, because I would think the people that would go out to do the missionary work would want to have proof that there's already some other aliens, if you will, other beings living out in these different planets that we have access to. As chances are, those people are not going to be people or beings, alien beings, whatever form of life they are, that will be following the exact same religious pattern that we follow here, or at least that some people follow in particular. So, yeah, I believe as far as missionary work, somebody eventually down the road is going to get a bug up their ass, and they're going to say, you know, these guys really need to have God in their life and Jesus in their life. And even though, especially with Jesus, to me it wouldn't even apply, because that was something that happened here on this world.
Right.
But I can see it happening. I really can. And one way or another, somebody's going to go out and want to make sure these people have heard the word of God.
I could also see it happening from people fleeing oppression.
Right.
You know, deciding that, oh, this world is just a den of crapola. And rather than violate the peaceful nature of their ism, they will go inflict themselves on some new planet somewhere where they can be free to believe whatever the hell they want, which, you know, I could see that happening too.
Right.
I was going back to one of our earlier news items in this episode where, for the first time, we have something that's a compressed cosmic radio signal being detected. Now, let's say the Royal Astronomical Society and their partners decrypt something in that says, oh, wow, there is sentient life out there, and now we have a source. I could see some of the uber conservatives all of a sudden getting on board with, yeah, we need to expand our space capacity because someday we're going to go and slap them in the face with the New Testament. you know, I could
thump,
see that.
Thump.
Yeah. Bible beaters. It's not just
thump,
a,
thump.
It's not just a label.
Yeah, I definitely see. I don't see human pattern changing very much, even if we do discover life on other worlds. I think that just opens up a whole new can of worms. I think there are some people who, regardless of their previous beliefs or what they've been taught previously, there's probably not as many people who believe that we're the one and only beings in the universe, and people or creatures of any type don't exist anywhere else in this universe. Just us. We're the center of the universe. I don't think there's quite as many people that believe that as there used to be.
Yeah. I would like to consider that population number to be shrinking. Unfortunately, I keep running into people who keep saying science doesn't exist. Science is a scam. Science doesn't do anything for me. It's like, yeah, get away from me. They keep popping up, though.
Yeah, they do.
And in government. So.
Yeah, yeah, they're everywhere, unfortunately. And well, the only thing you can do is just keep away from them.
So I guess
maybe we can go to another planet.
Yeah. I guess the key to this is likelihood. I think it's as likely as anything to happen once our actual departure technology gels and opens up to where the ability is within reach of most people, most humans, then I got to feel that somebody's going to have a credo somewhere that says, yep, we're going. And,
yeah,
you know, it's going to be it's going to be on like Donkey Kong after that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when they get out there and make a bad name for us, you know, by offending some alien race that can wholly kick our sphincter up around our ears. It's going to be on after that, too. It's
like, yeah, great. Another place to fight with.
All you humans. Yeah. All you humans. You're going.
Mm-hmm.
You're going down.
Exactly.
All right. So I think we've answered this question, at least from my perspective.
Yep, that's covered. So let's move on to books, TV, movies, vintage sci-fi TV and audiobooks. So I did not keep up on Ascension here.
I tried to watch it, CJ, and I got locked out by Sci-Fi Channel. So Sci-Fi Channel is not playing nice with us. Unless you connect up to your cable provider on their website, they will not let you watch episodes on the Sci-Fi website now of anything.
Oh, great.
So I have a special finger for the Sci-Fi Channel. At some point in the future, if this thing is on YouTube or on Netflix, I might be convinced to go look at it again. But by that time, all the sponsors who are behind this, you guys are going to be non-entities. Think about that when you consider funding your sci-fi. I mean, it looks like Sci-Fi Channel is starting to come back with original programming again.
Mm-hmm.
But this is hosing the fan.
Yeah.
I mean, you want us to you want us to pay for it online when we're already making the special effort to go to your website and just watch it. We're not keeping copies of it. So screw you, buddy.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've pretty much stayed away from sci-fi as often as I possibly could because not only because of the crappy stuff they've been putting on there and things that don't even belong there in the first place, like monster trucks and wrestling and whatever other garbage they put on there. They've strayed way away from being the original idea of what the Sci-Fi Channel was supposed to be. This doesn't really surprise me. They're using any way they can to suck you in and keep you on there, and that way there's no way you can watch it anywhere else unless it happens to go for sale on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, happens to go on Amazon or Netflix or somewhere. Might happen. I don't know. But I agree. It's like if you're going to make it that difficult for people to watch it, because not everybody has cable channels. You know, a lot of people do just watch things strictly over the internet because it's too expensive to have cable and internet and all these other things. So they're basically shutting out a huge portion of people who want to see their show but can't.
Yep. Amen.
Yep. This makes me not even motivated to watch this show now.
Yeah, I'm kind of done. I was thinking about even pulling it down off of our show agenda for this week just so we wouldn't pimp it. And last week we put up something, or last time, about The Expanse, I think.
Oh, right.
And that's another Sci-Fi Channel production. And you're not going to be able to watch any of this. So for S.A. Corey out there, yeah, I hope you got paid pretty good for your intellectual property on The Expanse. I'm listening to one of your audiobooks right now. I'm deluding myself that he would actually listen to our podcast, but I can do that. You've kind of trapped yourself into a dead end with the Sci-Fi Channel. I hope you didn't give away all of your rights.
Yeah, that's just it. I used to think at one point it'd be nice to have my books turn into movies, even if it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, but no, not anymore.
All right, so moving on to something I did get to see, and It wasn't this week. This week, for some reason, I was just not able to get around to watching anything except Agent Carter, and we'll catch up on that some other time. Gotham. Gotham still does not disappoint. This episode with the electrocutioner is freaking cool, guys. This guy is a Batman supervillain. I swear, he walks around with this generator on his back and just zaps people.
I could think of a few people I could do that to.
Yeah, it's actually kind of attractive. Everyone wants to be the electrocutioner now. Go get everyone that doesn't have dissipative shoes on.
There you go.
Also in this episode, Fish Mooney got ratted out by Oswald Cobblepot to Don Falcone, and She was getting tortured, and then she got busted free, and now Cobblepot's having to deal with Fish, having shown back up, and I guess I may have missed the episode this week where she did whatever damage she was going to do to him, but it was interesting that episode because Penguin, Oswald, ended up getting Fish's nightclub, and he's just kind of hanging out in it, kind of being the party guy for himself, and his mother, Carol Kane, is in there, and she's like getting plastered, dancing with the help, just being all disheveled. You know, it's like it was really entertaining from that aspect of it. She's always funny. So, yeah, that's all I got to say about Gotham for right now.
Okay.
Oh, Gordon got his badge back in that episode, too.
Oh, okay. So he's good to go.
Yep.
So, I don't know. We've actually been talking a lot about Dune lately. You've been reviewing the audiobooks and we've talked about the regular books. And this is a pretty good series. Now, there's been a lot of different attempts to make Dune come to the big screen or on television, and in this case, the 2000 version of, or here we go with the sci-fi version of Dune, and it was in two parts. It was a miniseries, and I'll be honest with you, I remember why I didn't get to see the whole thing, and it's because even though there were some things they kept to the book, unlike the original movie, some of the acting in this was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I wanted to take the guy who was playing Paul Atreides and punch him in the throat.
Alex Newman, isn't it?
Yeah. See, the only thing I don't like about the way they do this, and maybe it's because I'm so used to Dune that I've read the story, I understand the direction it's going and what to expect, but a lot of people watching this movie are going to be hella confused. They're going to be staring at this thing going, what the hell is going on? Now, as you go along, you do get a little bit more clear about why these things are happening, who these people are, what direction they're going in. But it is extremely confusing, just like the first one, the first original movie that was made on Dune, based on Dune. And that one was actually not too bad. It was made by Kyle MacLachlan, or not made by him, but he was playing Paul Atreides.
Yep.
And that wasn't too bad. I mean, it was bizarre in the way they handled certain things, but it was actually not too bad of a version. They did destroy the ending of the book in that movie, but at least they stuck more with the ending of the book in this miniseries for the sci-fi version. And I thought some parts of it were very surprising. I don't know if they were running out of money or what happened, but some of the effects were absolutely atrocious for being a 2000 movie.
Oh, yeah. The Moadib, the hopping mouse in the desert, was just ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, for $20 million, they didn't need to mail in the mouse. The mouse was horrible.
Like I was really...
freaking mouse, dude.
I know. It wasn't even that. I was very surprised at how badly the CGI, so-called CGI mouse, was in this movie. it looked like more of a two-dimensional cartoon.
They spent all the CGI dollars on the worm, which is granted, you know, that's probably the biggest thing in that movie is the worm, you know. The worm, everything should center around Shai Hulud. He makes the spice, and, you know, that allows us to go from here to there. But I'm with you. The acting was really bottom notch.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, you know, I was really surprised because William Hurt is in this movie. He plays Leto Atreides, mm-hmm. the father of Paul. And once again, I don't know how many people have read the book or seen the previous movies. You know, he wasn't that great in it either. And I don't know if it's so much the writing, the direction, or what, but the whole thing fell very, very flat. And the actors that they had in it did not even feel as if they were really passionately playing their parts.
I think it was the direction, personally.
Yeah. But now, I did like the floating fat man, the Bernhard Conan. Mm-hmm. You know, he actually wasn't too bad.
McNeese, yeah. You know, one thing I didn't like about him, though, was, but maybe it was different from the 1984 attempt at the movie. Mm-hmm. In this one, the Baron Harkonnen, every time he's monologuing his plans, he breaks into rhyme. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you, dude? Do you have a video coming or what?
Yeah. it's you know, what do they call it, creative license or whatever, but no. So I was actually pretty disappointed in it. I don't know. There were some parts that were kind of cool and okay, yes, this is following the book. Now we're going there. Now we're going the right direction. And then it would drastically change. The worms, were about the only thing that were good about it. They did a decent job on the worms, but they still felt like miniatures on a miniature set that had bad focus and bad blending with the characters. I don't know. It felt very half-assed to me.
Yeah, well, that's one butt cheek too many. The thing is, in this and I picked up on this. So in the book and in the first movie that they tried to make, everyone on Giedi Prime, which is the Harkonnen homeworld, or anyone who's involved and contracted to the Baron's house, mm-hmm. has heart plugs, except for the Baron himself. That's so if he doesn't like them, he can yank that tube right out of their chest, and they're dead. They're done.
Right.
The first movie, 1984, dealt with it. In this movie, it was lacking. And I felt that really played into the fact that you didn't get the impression of how totalitarian the Giedi Prime world was and anything that was in Harkonnen control. So I think I give the middle finger down on that one.
Right. Well, and see, that's just it. In the 84 movie, you saw how absolutely ruthless the Harkonnens were. And they flat out destroyed everybody to get where they wanted to be. And they were not nice about it in any way, shape, or form. Not only did you get this in the book and understood this in the book, they did a pretty good job in the 84 movie of showing how absolutely ruthless they were. In this version, the 2000 version on Sci-Fi, I felt they were just a big joke.
Yeah.
They were bumbling fools. They tried to act tough, but they weren't tough. And it absolutely completely lost the characterization of these people in the book in their version on the Sci-Fi version. I don't know if they were trying to tame it down for television, even though they had nudity in it. I don't know. It made no sense to me whatsoever. And like I said, the characters absolutely fell flat. I didn't feel any real passion for the characters or any type of, I don't know. It was tough to watch the entire series.
Yeah. Well, and that was the next thing that I was going to finish out with on this particular stop was that Dune, the Sci-Fi version, and then they made a second two-part miniseries, two or three-part, that was Children of Dune. Now, if you understand the Frank Herbert books in that series, it's Dune, Dune Messiah, then Children of Dune. So what they did was they took Dune Messiah and they bled it into the script at the back of Dune and in the front of Children of Dune. And so that's where you get into the fact that there's been this galactic jihad. Muad'Dib has sent out his Fatican and the Fremen across, you know, to all these worlds to wage war, to bring them all into understanding that Muad'Dib is now the emperor. And then somebody gets disgruntled, lights off a stone burner, which is Herbert speak for a nuclear weapon, Arrakis, in the main city of Arrakis, where the palace is, and he gets blinded, but he can still use his prescient vision to see things. So, yeah, I don't like the fact that they took an entire book, split it in half, and shoved it into these two. But at the same time, I get pissed off, and you and I have both been pissed off at this treatment of The Hobbit, where it got split into three separate movies. So,
right. You know,
it's anyone can make decisions like that. I just think that some of these are less thought out as far as how they affect actual fans of the matter. The CGI was shit.
Yeah.
When Paul and Jessica are trying to escape across the desert, yeah, you can see that they're running in place.
Oh!
I mean, you can fucking see it. They're on the same crest of the dune, and a thopter just, you know, buzzes them, and they take the head dive. You know damn well it was a small set. The CGI people, whatever. I don't care. I enjoy the story itself. That's why I liked watching it.
Yep, exactly. So.
All right, stop hating.
There you have it.
So.
All right, so Automata. So why don't you tell us about this trailer? It looks actually really good.
So I actually watched this movie. Right now it's on Netflix. We talked about it coming out in the news during one of our episodes in either August or September. And what I thought at the time, and what it comes across as, is a poor man's iRobot knockoff, and it is so not. You guys, whoever's listening to this, guys, girls, whatever, this movie is a very good example of satisfaction you can get by finding an independent film. It's not a reboot. It didn't Philip K. Dick Isaac Asimov's story of iRobot. Antonio Banderas actually plays an insurance adjuster in this thing. So all these robots are all over the place. I forget, they're called Pilgrim 7000s or something. This is post-apocalypse Earth. Pretty much all the water's going, if it's not mostly gone at this point. And there's only 21 million humans living still. So in order to help them continue living and maybe have a foothold to continue moving on, these robots are out doing all these things. They've got little newsreels showing the robots, you know, stomping back the desert, keeping humankind, what's left of them, safe. The town that they're in, I can't remember what town it is, but it should have been at one point fairly hydrated water, and it's not. But all these high-rise buildings have these Blade Runner-style advertisements that are holograms, huge building size holograms that are in the middle of the streets, you know, advertising, you know, this kind of blister gel or, you know, something that you might need if you're stranded in the future and have crotch itch or something. It really doesn't matter, but it was really cool the way it was done. I think during this film was actually, or right when it released, was also when Antonio Banderas and Melanie Griffith announced that they were getting divorced, and she's in this thing. She plays a rogue robotic scientist named Dr. Dupre. You will be surprised. If you watch this, you will really be surprised how her end occurs. I'm not going to give away any spoilers on that one, but it's pretty indicative of what a society will get to when everyone is scraping for themselves at the last.
And is this on Netflix?
Or? On Netflix.
Okay.
It's also on Amazon Prime. Netflix is where I saw it because, I don't like paying rental fees to Amazon for stuff for some reason. It's just odd. I'm odd.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am. That's why I haven't seen Lucy yet, because Lucy is on probably ought to get Lucy out of Redbox, but at least Automata is one I won't have to get out of Redbox, and since I'm still paying the Netflix. Yeah, Netflix. Oh,
get my fix on Netflix.
My monthly Netflix subscription. I can at least, you know, have applied it towards something that I used. Cool.
Sweet. All right, so let's move on to audiobooks.
All right. Well, this isn't the last one I listened to, but it is the last one that I posted to put up here. So, Last Colony, it's part of the Old Man's War series that John Scalzi wrote. Basically, I think it's the third book in the series. It has the series starts out with Old Man's War, which is where the Colonial Union is harvesting old people off of Earth, giving them hyper-accelerated bodies that they're transferring their consciousness into, only they're green, and they run around and kick ass everywhere that aliens are trying to beat back colonies anyway, so without diverging and having an hour-long speak about the entire series up to date. John Perry is a key character in The Old Man's War. It's basically the whole story is told from his perspective. The second book is called The Ghost Brigade. And what that refers to is people that had contracts for when they turned 75 on Earth, but they died before they were able to start their contract in the colonial fleet. Their consciousness kind of gets put into clone avatars that are then really, I mean, they're stateless beings, but they become special forces in the Colonial Defense Forces. And in that one, yeah, John Perry's predominant in it. In the Ghost Brigade, John Perry encounters a special forces soldier that tweaks his curiosity about memories from his past when he lived on Earth. And the main theme of the book is, you know, basically working, there's an alien conspiracy. There's an there's a group of alien races that are banding together to resist the Colonial Union and to start taking away planets. That one keeps going. So now we're up to The Last Colony. The Last Colony starts out with this group called the Conclave, which is 400-some alien races, have banded together and decided nobody, unless they belong to the Conclave, is going to colonize any more planets. And in The Last Colony, the Colonial Union shoots a colonization ship out, telling everyone that it's going to this pre-planned location, and it will be the Roanoke Colony. Any of you know history, know what that means for Roanoke, which I'll explain in a second here. But anyway, they don't show up where they think they were going to show up. So they end up having to live off the grid, literally, and try and they have plenty of encounters, and they survive for a year, and then the Colonial Union comes back and tries to wave this in the face of the Conclave. And I'm not going to give away any more spoilers. This book is really good. What's really good is if you just get a hair up your ass and go ahead and listen to Old Man's War, The Ghost Brigades, and then The Last Colony in sequence, you will rock on this series. The snark from John Scalzi is outstanding. The way even the narrator brings it across, and I'm sure that they had plenty of takes to get it right. But anything that John Scalzi writes, he wrote Red Shirts. So that ought to give you some idea of the level of snark this guy puts into his writing. He is awesome. I don't think I can give it any more praise than that. You know, this kind of thing playing on my radio in my pickup truck to and from the job keeps me from doing heinous things in society. So, when somebody has done something absolutely ludicrous and hateful at work, I can put something like this into my stereo system on my hour-and-a-half-long commute home, and by the time I get home, there is no likelihood that I will take out any of my day on any of my loved ones. Woo-hoo! I can't give it any higher praise than that.
There you go. Start feeding Audible books to Angus.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo! Yeah, is that what you were after, CJ?
Yep.
That's great.
Okay, so speaking of books, it's time for our shameless plug-ins. I'm CJ McKee, and I wrote Blood and Bane, The Dragon Sage Chronicles. You can find that on Amazon in both Kindle and print. And now, Audible!
Audible! And I'm Angus.
That was bull.
Yeah, and I'm Angus Day. I'm the science fiction geek of the pair here. Although CJ's gotten me into reading occasional bouts of fantasy. So, next to you, Universe. The link's going to be up in the show notes. I have 6 books up right now, ranging from Legacy of Daddy through Minus the Conscience. I'm soon to have a 7th book up called Truly Organic. The first 2 books that I have that I wrote, Legacy of Daddy and Next You Interstellar, are up as free radio show format podcasts on iTunes as the Legacy of Daddy podcast. I also write a blog, angus48@wordpress.com or .wordpress.com, and I review everything that I read more than 50% of, and you should too. Whether you read it, watch it, listen to it, if you enjoyed it, review it. If you didn't enjoy it, but you made it, you know, most of the way through it, review it and say why. You know, everyone has to protect their mental health, so no one should really read something they're actually considering heinous all the way through, unless you're really a glutton for self-punishment, and then I don't want to talk to you. But, yeah, if you review it, the artists out there should actually be able to adjust what they do, and that will adjust what you have to pick from the next time you're looking for something to enjoy.
Absolutely, I agree. It's the same thing with this show. If you have any questions, any comments, suggestions, you want to drop us a note, let us know how we're doing, please feel free to do so. You can reach us at mountaindragonmedia@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks, and you all have a great evening.
Yeah, everyone, have a great evening. Be safe, and be around to hear our next episode.